Good morning and welcome to the Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Jim Hansen. I'll be your board rep today. And hopefully we all, or some of us, got out to enjoy the weather we had this week after the beautiful service we had last week, getting us to embrace this time of year. Kind of forced itself on us this week. We have a variety of announcements on church life and activities. Please read the announcements in your order of service and feel free to take it home and read them. A few additional announcements. Today's food pantry collection is sponsored by the Social Activity Committee. The collection is for the Pewaukee Food Pantry. Monetary donations will be collected during the offertory. Loose cash donations will go to the food pantry. Checks can be made out to LCUUC. With the amounts for the food pantry and for LCUUC noted in the memo line or the check envelope, and contributions of food may be placed in the baskets in the foyer. Registration begins today for the March 19th retreat featuring Philip Chard, one of my personal favorites. So please stop by at the retreat table in the social hall for more details and information. They have a great day planned. Also in the social hall after the service, we would appreciate it if you'd stop by and sign the Standing on the Side of Love petition for full equality for people of all gender identities and sexual orientations. This hot off the press announcement is cabin fever starting to take its toll. The parents' night out service is being put on by the high school class and still has room for more kids. So if you can hang on till February 19th, we will watch your youngsters from 6 till 10 p.m. and see Mike Corral if you have any questions about that. And also after the service, the menu for the future discussion group is going to meet at 11:45 in classroom number 1. And I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you and would like you to sign the guest ledger on the visitors table in the foyer. There's a variety of information out there about our church and Unitarian Universalism, so help yourself to any that interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church or if you've been visiting for a while and are considering becoming a member. I'd be happy to talk to you about that. If you're visiting with your children, is our custom that the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the door and right across the hallway. There's a need for childcare during the service, and classes end at 11:15, at which time you can pick up your children from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. No takers. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. It's a good place to gather and further discuss the service. Please put your cell phones on silence mode during the service. And I hope this morning's service is inspiring, worthwhile, fulfilling. Our speaker today is our own Reverend Jane Espeson. And with that, we'll turn it over to you.
Hi, I'm Barb Adams. I'm the worship committee rep today. These are the opening words. O spinner, weaver of our lives, your loom is love. May we who are gathered here be empowered by that love to weave new patterns of truth and justice into a web of life that is strong, beautiful, and everlasting. We will now light our chalice, which is our tradition here in Unitarian Universalist Churches. And instead of singing the chalice words this morning, we're going to speak them, because sometimes speaking words is more powerful. Chalice, chalice, burning bright, help remind us with your light of how we'd like to live each day with love and truth we lead the way. Our theme this morning is on love, and we're going to have a story that is about love. So all of the children are invited to come to the front, and Randy Dorn is going to be our reader today. So come on up.
Everyone in the whole wide world walks around carrying an invisible bucket. You can't see it, but it's there. You have a bucket, your mom and dad have a bucket, your sister and brother have a bucket, your grandparents, friends, and neighbors all have a bucket. People you don't know have buckets too. Everyone carries an invisible bucket. Your bucket has one purpose only. Its purpose is to hold your good thoughts and good feelings about yourself. You feel very happy and good when your bucket is full, and you feel very sad and lonely when your bucket is empty. Other people feel the same way too. They're happy when their buckets are full, and they're sad when their buckets are empty. It's great to have a full bucket, and this is how it works. you need other people to fill your bucket, and other people need you to fill theirs. So how do you fill a bucket? You fill a bucket when you show love, respect, appreciation, and understanding to someone. When you say or do something kind, or even when you give someone a smile, that's being a bucket filler. A bucket filler is a loving, caring person who says or does nice things that make others feel special about who they are. When you make someone feel special, you are filling a bucket. But you can also ruin someone's bucket by taking out some good feelings. You ruin a bucket when you make fun of someone, when you say or do mean things, or even when you ignore someone. That's being a bucket bully. A bucket bully says or does mean things that make others feel bad. Many bucket bullies have an empty bucket. They think they can fill their own bucket by dipping into someone else's. But that will never work. You never fill your own bucket when you ruin someone else's. But guess what? When you fill someone's bucket, you fill your own bucket too. You feel good when you help others feel good about who they are. All day long, we are either filling up or dipping into each other's buckets by what we say and what we do. Getting to know someone who you think is different than you is a good way to fill their bucket, and yours too. Try to fill a bucket with goodness. You love your mom and dad. Why not tell them you love them? Your caring words will fill their buckets right up. Watch for smiles to light up their faces. You'll feel like smiling too. A smile is a good clue that you have filled a bucket. If you practice, you'll become a great bucket filler. Just remember that everyone carries an invisible bucket, and think of what you can say or do to fill it. Bucket filling is fun and easy to do. Doesn't matter how old or young you are. It doesn't cost any money. It doesn't take much time. And remember, when you fill someone else's bucket, you are filling your own bucket too. When you're a bucket filler, you make your home, your school, and your neighborhood better places to be. Bucket filling makes everyone feel good. And that's the end of the story.
I invite you all now to stand as you are willing and able to sing the first hymn of the morning in your blue Sing the Journey songbook. It is number 1014, Standing on the Side of Love. It's good to sing new songs that we haven't sung before. Otherwise, we'll never learn new pieces. This is the time in our service for the offertory. And as a reminder, the food pantry collection is part of the offertory today. When we give to this church, we give to our own lives. We are filling this bucket here, and we fill our own buckets as well.
And now is the time during our service where we honor the joys and concerns of our community. Please wait for a microphone and tell us your name and state your joy or concern. I will light a candle for all those caught up in the natural disasters and political conflicts that are so frightening in the world right now.
My name is Fran, and I would like you to light one candle for my former husband, Jerry. Some of you know Jerry. He suffered a major stroke yesterday morning. He's in ICU at Waukesha Memorial Hospital. And if you could also light another candle for my daughters, Shelley and Jessie, as they help each other and their dad through this very difficult time. Thank you.
I'm Sonia, and I'd like you to light a candle of joy and continuing concern. Summer and Ahmed, who live in central Cairo, were able to make contact with my brother and sister-in-law on Thursday, and they're doing all right. So just to hope that that comes to a peaceful resolution.
This is a I guess a candle of joy for myself. Unfortunately, the company I used to work at closed its doors at the end of December, but for me, I was able to get a job before they closed. But there are still people looking for jobs, so it's a candle concern for them also.
My name is Tim. Would you please light a candle for my mom, Jessie, who passed a week ago today.
My name is Leanne, a candle of joy. My nephew is getting married in May.
My name is Duke, a candle of kind of joy and concern. We recently worked on the sound system, and we've seen some definite improvements, but as you've noticed today, there's still more to do, then that's the concern side. Thank you very much.
My name is Jerry. Please light a candle of joy for the wonderful dinner party that we attended last night with Patty Walker and Chris White, which is part of the silent auction. We had a wonderful time.
I'm Robert, and if you'd light a candle of joy, although I'm laid off of work right now, it gave me the opportunity to spend a week and a half of training with Habitat for Humanity Disaster Response in New Orleans.
And I will light one last candle for those joys and concerns that we hold in our hearts.
I invite you now to enter into a moment of meditation, prayer, and reflection, and I will begin with some words by Howard Thurman. In the quietness of this place, surrounded by the all-pervading presence of the holy, my heart whispers, keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve, that in good times or in tempests, I may not forget that to which my life is committed. Keep fresh before me the moments of my high resolve. You may remain seated while we sing the centering hymn number 1053, How Could Anyone? And again, it's in your new blue songbook.
sorry. Sex and love. Uh-oh. If you know what the difference is between having sex and making love, then you should consider yourself to be a very lucky person indeed. Even if you cannot put that difference in your, excuse me, even if you could not put the difference between the two into words, you are nonetheless very fortunate. The ineffable difference, that is, the unspeakable difference between sex and love, even though the one is dependent on the other, is that certain something that love is. There is much about what love is that cannot be put into words. However, not being a shy person when it comes to speaking out about the silent sacredness of the ineffable, I will bulldoze my way into the unspeakable place where even angels fear to tread. I think, to oversimplify this delicate and complex issue, that having sex is taking, making love is giving. And what I mean by that is this. Having sex is a way of gratifying a need or an urge, albeit a natural and good urge, if you like, where the focus is on the satisfaction of this need. Now, this is not to imply that there is anything wrong with this, especially if the two people involved, or the one doing it alone, or the more than two, if that is the scene. As long as those people are in agreement that that is what they are doing is satisfying a mutual need, and no more than that. The debate over the ethics of such sexual activities is something I do not care to address here. But I will point out parenthetically that Augustine's view of sexual desire being the hallmark of original sin is more of a reflection on Augustine's own neurosis than it is a reflection of the truth. Anyway, I digress. On the other hand, making love means enjoying sex while also enjoying the loving tenderness and care for the person toward whom one's passion is directed. Making love focuses on giving to the other person as other than me. The other, in fact, is what makes giving possible, since the other is a rupture in my comfortable world of the same. Let me repeat that. The other, in fact, is what makes giving possible, since the other is a rupture in my comfortable world of the same. Now, I did say that I'm oversimplifying, did I not? I'm intentionally reducing a truth about sexual relations to a naked truism, the pun is intended, in order to highlight a very unfair reduction of homosexuality that was in vogue when I was a much younger man. I was born into a homophobic culture in 1952. As I mentioned in my sermon a few months ago, it was clear to me that there was something wrong about my feelings as a boy, and that meant that there was clearly something wrong with me. As I plunged into puberty and manhood in the 60s and 70s, and as I was then consciously coming to grips with being gay and with being a dedicated religionist, homosexuality was thought of almost exclusively as its own third syllable. That is, sex. Consequently, when the straight world saw the word, the third syllable jumped out, as if that is the essence of a gay person. Homosexuals were characterized, and are still characterized in fundamentalist circles of any religion, as being selfish, as being focused on sexual gratification only, as if heterosexuals didn't care about sex, but only had relations in order to reproduce. Homosexuals were thought of as being incapable of long-term loving relationships, the way that heterosexuals were capable of in their long, lifelong marriages, as divorce in this country was still unheard of in the 60s and 70s. It's my timing. And homosexuality was considered to be a neurosis by the psychiatric profession right up until 1975. Homosexuality was a thing in itself until that year, like Immanuel Kant's Ding on Sieg, but which could be measured, unlike Kant's Ding on Sieg, and therefore quantified by psychologically objective test instruments, such as the Edwards Preference Profile and the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory. These accurately calibrated instruments could tell a psychiatrist just how queer one was. Even if you've never taken the Edwards Preference Profile or the MMPI, you may remember the finely tuned and culturally neutral IQ tests that were administered in schools all across the country. If you've ever taken an IQ test, you will appreciate my sarcasm. Catholic religious orders such as Augustinians, Franciscans, and Benedictines, and other such institutions would use these written instruments to test the male candidates wishing to enter their all-male environments. The management of these religious orders felt a need to make sure that the male candidates wishing to enter their all-male order weren't attracted to other males. For God knows what reason, the Benedictines let me in anyway. Yet, to be fair, the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, noted in 1975 that heterosexuals also suffered from mental illness, and some of them were even neurotic. They also noted that more than a few homosexuals who were in psychotherapy for other reasons were being helped in regaining their emotional and mental health by their longtime loving sexual partners. So in 1975, the APA wisely declared that henceforth, people should not think of homosexuality as a form of mental illness. And I say amen to that. If God is love, then she who abides in love abides in God and God in her. I say we should have more God. I say we should have more good. I say we should make love, not war. And I say that making love is an excellent way to take off pounds sensibly. I do. And it is true. As St. Francis of Assisi said, it is better to give than to receive. And so, my dearly beloved brothers and sisters, I encourage you today to accept that challenge of loving others. Give of yourself whenever it is prudent, and even sometimes when it's not. But the point is to give. Make your partner know that you are there for them. Let them know that you love them and say so when you are making love. Next time when you are so engaged, think of St. Francis of Assisi. Think of the God of love and give it all you can for your beloved. Amen. Alleluia. Blessed be, and thank you. We will now listen to a very beautiful song sung by Vince Gill. The words to this song are in your order of service.
Can bring you
Not long ago, I received an email from a man who contacted me about coming to church here to see what it was like. This man didn't dare to come to our church, and he trusted. He was unsure whether he would be welcomed because he was gay. Even though we state that we are a welcoming congregation on our website, which he had read. For him, because of the real world he lives in, where there is hatred and bigotry, abuse and violence for someone who stands outside the center of some norm someone else has determined, he was worried. Worried that we might say we were welcoming, but that we might not really be that. Worried that there might be hypocrisy inside the walls of this church, as there is so much hypocrisy inside the walls of so many religious institutions. Were we really a different place to worship? He wanted to know. Was our church really a place where one is allowed to be oneself? I am a gay man just coming to terms with his homosexuality, he begins. How welcoming is your church? Do you have openly gay members? Are all members equally welcoming? I don't know if I consider myself out. I'm working on it, but it is a slow process. I just feel very alone and tired. I get hundreds of emails from people on a regular basis, but this email stood out. It made me so very sad. And the words from one of the songs in the 1947 musical South Pacific came to my head. You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. Before any of us made that first visit to this church, how many felt that we needed to contact the minister ahead of time to be sure that it was really a safe place to come to? How many of us sitting here today worried that we would be shunned or ridiculed or worse if we came to this church and allowed ourselves to really be seen for who we were? What norm is so firmly in place in this country where still in the year 2011, a person who is not heterosexual needs to feel worried about being accepted, needs to worry about being open about whom he or she might love, needs to worry that even in a place of worship, in a religious institution where God's love in whatever form or name it may have, may be espoused, but not really be alive in the hearts and the minds of the people sitting in the pews. What norm is so firmly in place in this country still that we as UUs feel proud and even courageous to be able to say that we are a welcoming congregation? Why are we not instead saddened or even angry that we have to say this? Saddened and angry that we live in a time where this must be said, because we are still so far from being a country where that issue was resolved long, long ago. Were you aware that for many gay partners in the United States, Europe offers a safe haven? Since there are still many parts of our country which continue to push for a constitutional amendment outlawing marriage for gays and lesbians, the pro-gay stance of Europe is quite unique. In an article written in a British publication, two men tell their story about being gay in Europe, and I would like to read a portion of that article for you. Mark Berendt and Beso Kutashvili live in South London in the United Kingdom, a new environment for them and far away from family and friends. They met 3 years ago while Mark Berendt, an American citizen, worked for an international organization in the former Republic of Georgia. They both enjoyed life there, but in the traditional and religious Orthodox Georgian society, homosexuality is a considerable social stigma and remains very much closeted. As their relationship developed, the resistance from Kushavili's Georgian family increased. And finally, the couple saw no other solution but for Berendt to seek work in Europe in order for them to be able to live together. We are not living in the United States because I could not bring Beso here, because we could not live in the United States openly and safely as a gay couple. I was forced to leave the United States. Here in Europe, we have protection. 14 countries in Europe offer some sort of legal protection to same-sex couples. Denmark, Finland, Norway, Croatia, Germany, Switzerland, Sweden, Luxembourg, Scotland, France, Iceland, Portugal, Britain, and Hungary. While newer European Union countries of Poland and Slovenia are preparing laws on registering partnerships. The European region of the International Gay and Lesbian Association, which is a gay rights organization, welcomes all moves toward equal rights. We support any level of recognition which moves to improve rights for the LGBT community in whatever shape they may take, says the organization's spokesperson. What we care about is the substance of the law. It is not a matter of wording. So how far back do these issues have been a part of the creation of human civilizations? Although same-sex relationships were quite common in ancient Greece, Rome, and pagan Celtic societies, after Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, severe laws against homosexual behavior appeared. An edict by the Emperor Theodosius I in the year 390 condemned all homosexual men to death by public burning. This was followed by the Corpus Juris Civilis of Justinian I in the year 529, which prescribed public castration and execution for all who committed homosexual acts. Justinian's law code then served as the basis for most European countries' laws against homosexuals for the next 1,400 years. Homosexual behavior, called sodomy, was considered a capital crime, and thousands of homosexual men were executed across Europe during waves of persecution in these countries. Lesbians were less often singled out for punishment, but they also suffered persecution and execution from time to time. But here are some other interesting facts. Since the foundation of Poland, in the year 966, Polish law has never defined homosexuality as a crime. During the French Revolution, the French National Assembly rewrote the criminal code in the year 1791, omitting all reference to homosexuality. Various countries under dictatorships in the 20th century were very anti-homosexual, such as in Nazi Germany and in Spain under Francisco Franco's regime. In contrast, after Poland regained independence after World War I in 1932, it became the first country in 20th century Europe to decriminalize homosexual activity, followed by Denmark in 1933, Iceland in 1940, Switzerland in 1942, and Sweden in 1944. And in a radical move, in 1979, a large number of people in Sweden called in sick one day to their workplaces with a case of being homosexual. in protest of homosexuality being classified as an illness. This was followed by an activist occupation of the main office of the National Board of Health and Welfare, and within months, Sweden became the first country in the world to remove homosexuality as an illness. In 1989, Denmark was the first country in Europe and in the world to introduce registered partnerships for same-sex couples. And in 2001, a next step was made when the Netherlands opened civil marriage for same-sex couples, which made it the first country in the world to do so. Since then, since 2001, six other European states followed: Belgium in 2003, Spain in 2005, Norway and Sweden in 2009, and Portugal and Iceland in 2010. There's also the strong possibility politically in 2011 that same-sex marriage will become legal in two other European countries, Slovenia and Luxembourg. And Finland also seems to be on its way to approve gender-neutral marriage law, as four out of the five largest political parties of Finland have taken the issue on their political agenda. In October of 2009, the Assembly of the Church of Sweden voted strongly in favor of giving its blessing to homosexual couples, including the use of the term marriage or matrimony. The new law was introduced in November, and it is the first case in the world to do so. And now here we are, here in the United States, in the year 2011, celebrating today Standing on the Side of Love Sunday, a day where within Unitarian Universalism we stand alongside of and advocate for those who are disenfranchised in our culture, in our country, whether we are focusing on immigration rights or on the rights of lesbians, gays, bisexual, and transgender people. Today, here in our UU churches across the country, we are meant to feel proud and progressive, liberal, and the leaders by stating that we are welcoming congregations. Well, certainly this is an important thing to say in these times, but I would like for us to take a look at this from another angle, from the angle that having to say that we are a welcoming congregation is really a strong reminder to ourselves of how very far behind we are compared to much of the world, of how very far we have yet to go. And so that is why I felt so sad when I received this man's email. Sad that in this great nation of ours, we are not progressing forward as we should be, but in so many ways are going backwards. All humans need love, whether straight or gay, the email finishes saying. It nourishes the soul and the spirit. For most, it is easier to find and express than for others. Sometimes for someone that is gay, because of their family or job, they are not able to be open about their sexuality. And this could mean a life of loneliness or deceit, which can be very difficult, a difficult act to play, which makes finding and expressing love and being who they really are a toxic and depressing situation. The stress on the mind and the body and the spirit can sometimes become overwhelming. I just wish to be able to be me. Whether we are talking about slavery or women's rights or civil rights or immigration rights or LGBT rights, it all boils down to the same thing: the culture we live in, the prejudices that are being taught. I encourage you all to please sign the petition today so that full equality may fall upon the lives of those in the LGBT communities. And by God, I hope that next year, when this annual Standing on the Side of Love campaign comes around again, we are further down the road with regard to these rights. And I hope that our children who are here in this church are being carefully taught so that in their lifetimes there will be no need for this annual campaign, but that it will be a thing of the past, because the norm in these United States will have caught up to that of Western Europe, and we will truly be one country, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We are now going to rise and sing the final hymn of the morning. We are a gentle, angry people. And we are going to sing all of the verses. Oh, it's number 170. We have 4 minutes if you would like a polylog. Otherwise, we will simply have our closing words.
just want to give all my love and respect to those with the courage to find the truth and the seekers of truth.
These are the closing words. They're from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 13. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels, but do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions, and if I hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices only in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. But as for prophecies, they will come to an end. And as for tongues, they will cease. And as for knowledge, it will come to an end. For we know only in part, and we prophesy only in part. But when the complete comes, the partial will come to an end. For when I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became an adult, I put an end to childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, and then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. Go in peace.